Hello, and welcome to Arbitration Acumen, a podcast from Bracewell's International Arbitration Group that connects in-house counsel and arbitration practitioners with industry experts, institutional insiders, and top arbitrators from around the globe to share their views on key issues in arbitration today. You can reach out to any of today's speakers by emailing arbitrationacumen@bracewell.com. And we hope you enjoy this episode of Arbitration Acumen.
Welcome back to the next episode of Arbitration Acumen, in which we'll discuss the Australian Center for International Commercial Arbitration, commonly called ACICA, with Diana Bowman, who is ACICA's Secretary General. I'm JP Duffy. I'm an international arbitration partner at Bracewell based in New York that acts as both counsel and arbitrator in international arbitration seated around the world under a variety of governing laws and arbitral rules. I'm qualified in New York, England, and Wales, and the DIFC courts in Dubai, where I previously lived and practiced. Diana is Secretary General at the ACICA and is based in Sydney. Prior to joining ACICA in mid-2024, Diana was Senior Legal Counsel at Bouygues Construction Australia in Sydney and at Vinci Energies in France and Australia. Diana previously worked in private practice, including in the international arbitration team at White & Case in Paris. Diana holds a Bachelor of Laws with honors and a Bachelor of Arts with honors from the University of Melbourne in Australia, along with an LLM in French and European law from the Université Paris 1 Pantheon Sorbonne. She teaches in the LLM International Construction Contracts Program at the Université Paris Pantheon, ASSES, at the Paris and Singapore campuses, and is qualified as a lawyer in Australia and France. So welcome, Diana. We have a great guest, and we're really looking forward to hearing from you today.
Thanks so much, JP, and thank you for having me on today's podcast. I'm delighted to be here.
Good, good. Well, before we begin, let me just give a bit of background about the ACICA for those who are less familiar. ACICA is a nonprofit organization that was established in Australia to advance Australia's profile as one of the region's premier seats for resolving cross-border disputes. 2025, auspiciously enough, marks the ACICA's 40th anniversary. ACICA supports the resolution of complex commercial disputes by administering arbitrations under the ACICA arbitration rules and ad hoc arbitrations under the UNCITRAL rules, as well as other ad hoc proceedings. It acts as an appointing authority for arbitration, mediation, expert determination, other ADR proceedings. It acts as the default appointing authority under the International Arbitration Act 1974. It promotes Australia as a safe and neutral arbitral seat. It develops world-class institutional rules and encourages education regarding best practices in arbitration. And it actively engages with the courts, government, and legal profession in Australia and beyond. ACICA maintains a panel of arbitrators, which serves as a resource for ACICA appointments and party nominations, as well as more generally, as a public resource for arbitrator appointments. It's got a panel of tribunal secretaries that acts as a resource for tribunals and parties undertaking arbitration in Australia and the region. And ACICA also maintains a panel of mediators for appointment purposes, which may also be utilized by parties as a resource for party nominations. ACICA maintains a practice and procedure toolkit, which provides guidance on best practice standards to parties involved in arbitration in Australia. And the toolkit contains model clauses, sample submissions, and guidance notes, including on the appointment of arbitrators and the use of tribunal secretaries. ACICA actively hosts educational events, including conferences, seminars, roundtables, and other events to promote the growth of arbitration within Australia and throughout the Asian Pacific region. One of the key events that ACICA organizes each year is the Australian Arbitration Week, commonly known as the AAW, which is held annually on rotation between Sydney, Melbourne, Perth, and Brisbane. AAW features a series of panel discussions, expert-led sessions, networking events, and social gatherings that cover regional and global trends in arbitration, including the flagship event, which attracts people from around the world. The ACICA Secretariat is located in Sydney, and the Secretariat manages the administration of arbitrations and mediations referred to ACICA and provides additional support services for arbitration and mediation proceedings. Akika has a number of cooperation agreements with institutions such as the SIAC, the CTAC, the KCAB, the AAA ICDR, and the PCA for the mutual promotion of international arbitration, both regionally and globally, and also has a separate commission that deals specifically with the resolution of shipping and transport disputes, which is called the Australian Maritime and Transport Arbitration Commission. AMTAC has a separate panel of arbitrators for the purpose of appointments and may be utilized by parties as a resource for party nominations. So it's clear that the Akika is active in both Australia and the broader Asian Pacific region. So let's hear more about it directly from Diana. Diana, welcome and thanks again for joining us.
Thanks so much, JP, for this fantastic introduction and thanks again for having me.
Yeah, of course, of course. I know the audience is really keen to hear from you because I think many of the members have a lot of experience around the globe, but I think Australia is one of those jurisdictions that probably is very intriguing to most. So let me start with a basic question. Does the Australian government play any role in funding Akika?
Thanks, JP. So the answer to that one is no, Akika does not receive any funding from the Australian government. As you mentioned in your introduction, we're a not-for-profit organization and we're funded via three sources. First, the fees that we charge for our services, i.e. case administration fees. Second, the profits from the events that we organize. And third, the fees that we receive from our members. We currently have 15 premium corporate members and 2 affiliate corporate members representing law firms, bar associations, and expert consulting firms that are most active in arbitration in Australia. You can find their names on our website, and we're very grateful for their support, many of which have been supporting Akika on an annual basis since we were founded. Without them, we really couldn't operate. We also receive annual fees from a number of individual members, including our panel of fellows, which is our roster of arbitrators, along with a number of associate members. So they are our current sources of funding at the moment for Akika.
Interesting. So it sounds a bit like the way that the NIAC is funded in New York, which is it's an interesting model because it certainly does make it a bit challenging and it is different than other institutions. So good to hear. Now, how exactly is Akika governed and what's the committee structure?
So Akika is governed by an active board of directors comprised of leading international arbitration practitioners from Australia and around the world. Our board is chaired by our president, Judith Levine, who is a leading international arbitrator based in Sydney. Judith has been a long-serving member of the Akika board and was one of our vice presidents prior to her appointment as president in June last year. And you can find the names of all of our 11 esteemed board members on our website. Akika also has a professional advisory council, or PAC, as we call it, because we love acronyms in Australia, which is a larger group that is also comprised of leading international commercial arbitration practitioners from Australia and around the world who act in a general advisory capacity and offer strategic advice to Akika. We also call upon members of the PAC to make recommendations to the Akika board on applications for consolidation, joinder, and challenges to arbitrators under the Akika rules. Again, you can find the names of our esteemed PAC members on our website. Akika also has a huge network of committees, which take the lead in driving various initiatives and projects. There are perhaps too many to name, but in a nutshell, we have our rules committee, which I'll come back to, I think, later in our discussion. We have our judicial liaison committee, which may be unique to Akika. It's mandated to engage with the Australian judiciary to promote the harmonization of approaches taken to arbitration-related court proceedings. We have a legislative committee, which aims to increase engagement with the Australian government regarding legislative development and reform in Australia to ensure our legislative framework continues to reflect best international practice. We have our diversity committee, which aims to encourage and support diversity in all activities undertaken by Akika. We have the Practice and Procedures Board, which maintains the Practice and Procedures Toolkit that you mentioned in your intro, JP. We have a number of state and territory committees to ensure that we continue to be a truly national institution. And we have a number of task forces which are doing really important work, including the Sustainability Task Force and the South Pacific Task Force. We also have a users committee to engage with our users, which is something that I do want to grow during my time at Akika. And last but not least, we have Akika 45, which is our initiative for younger and emerging arbitration practitioners. So that's the great network of committees, task forces that we work with under the leadership and guidance of our board.
Diana, that's really fascinating. Now, the PAC, you mentioned that they make advisory decisions on things like consolidation, joinder. So are they functioning a bit like the way that the court might function at the ICC or at some other organizations? Or tell us about a little bit more about PAC.
Yeah, thanks, JP. Yes, they are, in a nutshell, they are operating in a similar way, although they are only, let's say, called upon to give advisory opinions on those three matters under our rules: consolidation, joinder, and challenges. And that is done sort of on a rotating basis. And on each occasion, we would approach three PAC members to give a recommendation, which would then be passed on to our board, who would ultimately make the decision, but would obviously take guidance from that recommendation, but is not bound by it. So we operate in that way with our PAC. And the PAC, again, the full list is on our website, and you'll see there's really some leading international and local arbitration practitioners. And we do really rely on our PAC members for strategic advice and guidance, and obviously input on those decisions when we do need those recommendations.
Which part of the organization is helping with arbitrator appointments?
So arbitrator appointments ultimately will be, again, approved by the AKIKA board. But in the first instance, it will be the AKIKA secretariat. If we are being called upon to appoint, it will be the AKIKA secretariat who will make an initial recommendation to the board.
And then the board makes the ultimate decision.
Correct. Right. And they may look to the shortlist that the secretariat has prepared. More often than not, they might propose additional names, and it's an ongoing dialogue to really identify the best candidates.
And Diana, you mentioned as well as, I think you said, a South Pacific committee. Is that correct?
Yes, we have a South Pacific task force.
South Pacific task force. Okay, now what is the mandate of the South Pacific task force?
So this was a task force that was created under the presidency of Georgia Quick, who is the immediate past president prior to Judith Levine, who is, as I said earlier, our current president. And it's really to drive AKIKA's engagement in the Pacific region. One of the key projects, and it's one that we might come back to later, that the Pacific Task Force has been in charge of is the Pacific Scholarship Program. I'll say more perhaps later, but that is one of so far the key deliverables that task force has been involved with. And it involves running a biennial scholarship. So every 2 years, and we ran the first edition in 2024, of selecting two practitioners based in the South Pacific region and awarding them scholarships to come to Australian Arbitration Week. And that has been one of the most rewarding projects I've been involved with my time at AKIKA so far. And that South Pacific Task Force is continuing our engagement in the region, again, finding ways that we can build our networks and help where we can do capacity building in the region, and also see where any AKIKA rules can usefully be used.
Fascinating. Now, Diana, let's shift gears a bit and just back up with a more basic question for those that don't know it. Does the AKIKA administer both international and domestic cases?
Yes, AKIKA administers both domestic and international cases. For example, in 2024, 46% of the new administered arbitration cases were international in the sense that they involved at least one non-Australian party with an address for service outside Australia. If parties domiciled in Australia but owned by entities outside Australia were treated as international for AKIKA's reporting purposes, at least for the 2024 statistics, the proportion of international cases would increase to 69%. And this is very consistent with my experience in the construction and energy industries, having worked for two French-owned subsidiaries operating in Australia. Especially in the construction and energy fields, Australia is a truly internationalized market. So you do often see a parent company based overseas, which, at least in my experience, may be more comfortable with arbitration and may push for the inclusion of an AKIKA arbitration clause. So I do expect that number of international cases, whether they be purely international or we treat them as domestic cases where there is nonetheless an international parent company, I do see that number continue to rise in the future.
Interesting. Well, since we're talking about that, let's talk about the 2024 caseload a bit. How many cases did AKIKA register in 2024?
So we had 25 new cases or filings in 2024.
And how many of those new cases were arbitrations?
Of those filings, 13 were new administered arbitration cases. 11 were expert appointment cases, and one was an administered mediation case.
Interesting. Okay. And what was the total value of the new cases that were filed?
Of the 13 new administered arbitration cases, 8 were quantified with a total value of over 74.45 million Australian dollars, or approximately 48.7 million USD. And of the 54 cases under administration by Akika in 2024, including those filed in 2024 and in the years prior, 38 were quantified with a total value of over 3.315 billion Australian dollars, or approximately 2.166 billion USD. So we do routinely handle very high value complex disputes.
Definitely. Those are impressive numbers. Now, you mentioned earlier construction and energy. Are there particular industries that are represented more heavily in the caseload than others?
Yes. So the construction industry in particular has traditionally generated the highest number of cases filed at Akika, followed by the energy and resources sectors. And we see this reflected in our statistics in recent years. In 2024, construction and infrastructure and energy and resources disputes continued to be the predominant industries in our cases. For example, in 2024, 31% of new cases were related to construction and 15% related to energy and resources. That said, Akika is seeing a diversification of industries represented in our cases, including new and emerging industries.
Now, just to follow up on that a bit, you said energy and resources. Within the resources category, I assume mining would be one. What are some of the others?
Within resources, mining would be the key industry represented, and it may not always be. It could also be ancillary disputes related to mining projects. I might add that one potential area for new disputes in the future may be critical minerals as well, given, for example, the recent partnership with the US and also Australia's inactive negotiations with other countries such as India in relation to critical minerals as opposed to traditional mining, let's say. So that may also be another area of growth for Akika.
Got it. Interesting. Well, that is certainly a growth industry and a hot political topic around the globe. So I would expect that there are going to be more disputes in that sector. Now, what are some of the other, you mentioned other emerging industries. What are some of the other industries that you see cases coming from?
Yes, we've seen disputes arise in a wide variety of industries in recent years, including disputes arising from share purchase agreements, sale of goods and business sale agreements, finance and retail, along with emerging industries such as cryptocurrency, medicinal cannabis, and online content creation. So in addition to our traditional industries, we are seeing some very new and evolving and emerging industries being represented.
Interesting. Now, are there particular industries as well that the Akika would like to focus on more in the future beyond the ones you've just mentioned?
Well, going back to, I suppose, the previous question, given Australia's abundant natural resources and also our growing focus on renewable energy and sustainability, I do think that construction, energy and resources disputes will likely continue to be prominent in our caseload. In particular, we've handled a number of disputes related to renewable energy, which is a very strong sector in Australia. Almost 30% of energy-related matters that Akika has handled since 2011 have involved solar or wind energy. And we expect that trend to continue, particularly given the international players on the market here in those sectors, who, as I mentioned earlier, tend to be more comfortable with arbitration as a dispute resolution method and are proposing Akika arbitration clauses when they can in their contracts. And as I mentioned earlier, there's other industries that we're looking to, including emerging ones. We've mentioned critical minerals, maybe defense. We've seen and heard anecdotally about Akika clauses being proposed in such a wide variety of industries, and we're really keeping our ear to the market to see where Akika can be most useful to the market and for our users.
That's great. That's great. Now, we're getting towards the end of the year, obviously, and I think by the time this gets released, it will be almost the conclusion of 2025. I mean, given that it's the 40-year anniversary for Akika, can you share a little bit with us about how 2025 is looking so far in terms of the caseload?
Thanks, JP. Yes, it's looking very positive. We had a really busy start to the year, and we are on track to exceed last year's case numbers, both in terms of new arbitration cases and administered mediations. There is also a very strong culture of mediation in Australia, and we do have a set of mediation rules. So all that to say, it's been a really busy year for our team in terms of caseload, in addition to all of the celebrations associated with our 40th anniversary.
That's great. That's great. Well, let's shift gears then and talk a bit about the AKICA rules for those that are less familiar. Now, it's my understanding that in 2021, the AKICA issued the fourth edition of its rules, which I've read through and which seem very progressive. What were some of the key changes that were made in those rules?
Thanks, JP. Yes, as you say, the 2021 AKICA rules are very innovative and have been really well received by the market. In terms of some of the key changes that were made in those rules. So first of all, under the rules, there is now expanded scope for consolidation and multi-contract arbitrations. The power to consolidate proceedings to encompass claims under more than one arbitration agreement, even where the parties to the arbitration are not the same, was expanded. The rules provide a streamlined approach for multi-contract arbitration, allowing, for example, parties to commence a single arbitration with a single notice of arbitration in respect to disputes under multiple contracts. In addition, tribunals in AKICA arbitrations are empowered to conduct related proceedings concurrently, one after the other, or to suspend a proceeding where the same tribunal is constituted in each arbitration and there is a common question of law or fact. The 2021 rules also introduce measures to ensure more effective case management, including, for example, the introduction of time limits for delivery of awards. An arbitral tribunal is required, absent a shorter period being required by law or by the parties, to render an award no later than the earlier of 9 months from the date the file is transmitted to the tribunal, or 3 months from the date the tribunal declares the proceedings closed. That's under the regular rules. And under the expedited rules, the timelines are even shorter. There's also a provision requiring tribunals to discuss with the parties the possibility of using mediation or other forms of ADR to settle the dispute. There are provisions related to third-party funding, particularly in relation to disclosures. There is also provisions allowing for enhanced oversight of costs by AKICA. And the 2021 rules also introduced a new provision explicitly recognizing the tribunal's power to make an award granting early dismissal or termination of any claim, defense, or counterclaim. Finally, there are also some changes to the definition of costs, including, for example, in relation to third-party funding costs. And there's a few of the innovations in the 2021 rules that we have noticed being generating interest in the market.
Interesting. Now, I understand as well that the 2021 rules are being reviewed. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Thanks, JP. So AKICA conducts a review of our rules approximately every 5 years to ensure that they continue to reflect international best practice and continue to meet and exceed user expectations. The current AKICA Rules Committee is chaired by James Morrison from Peter and Kim in Sydney and consists of representatives from private practice, in-house counsel, and academia based in both Australia and abroad. The revision process will continue to build on AKICA's established practice of providing an effective, efficient, and fair arbitral process. Currently, the Rules Committee is considering, has formed a number of subcommittees, and they're considering topics such as emergency arbitrator provisions and expedited rules, artificial intelligence, procedural innovations to encourage settlement, a potential opt-in appeals mechanism, and sustainability provisions. So the Rules Committee hosted an event during Australian Arbitration Week, or AAW as you called it earlier, JP, in Sydney last October, and that was really well attended and those topics were discussed. The next phase is public consultation, where we'll go to the market and to our users and test some of these proposed reforms with an aim to release the new rules next year. So that's another project that's generating lots of really interesting ideas and debate and keeping us all very busy.
Interesting. Okay, well, certainly emergency arbitration is something near and dear to my heart. Is there a possibility under either the 2021 rules or the possible rule revisions to bring a dispositive motion?
So yes, we did. That was introduced in the main rules in 2021. It also exists in the expedited rules at present.
Excellent. Well, I have an interesting discussion about that coming up soon. So that's why I was intrigued, but always good to know. Well, that's great. Now, you have been in your current role for a little over a year, and you obviously have big shoes to fill with Deb Tomkinson having been your predecessor. But what have you found to be the most challenging aspect of your current role?
Thanks, JP. And yes, I'd like to start with a huge shout out and kudos to Deb Tomkinson, as you say, my longstanding predecessor, who was really instrumental in the growth of Akika to the point that we're at today. And so I can take really very little credit for the very healthy state that Akika is in as we speak. And it's been built by the contributions of many people over many years. And as I mentioned earlier, I think when it comes to challenges, we are not for profit and we do not receive any government funding. So we do have very limited resources and we're doing a lot with a little. And that's, I think, what I've found most challenging. We have a very small headcount compared to other institutions operating on our scale. So we really do punch above our weight, delivering both excellence in case administration and ambitious and innovative projects to encourage the use of arbitration and Australia as a safe and neutral seat for arbitration. And the fact that we have grown so much in recent years is really testament to just how much support we have from the arbitration community. We have so many people who want to support Akika and see us grow, and they volunteer their time and energy to do so. In particular, we rely on support from our volunteer board members, members more generally, our sponsors, our committees and task force members, and so on and so forth. And they really do show incredible generosity in supporting Akika, and we're very grateful to them. So as much as it's a challenge, it's also a really rewarding part of the job to know just how much support we do have from the community.
That's great. Well, and, you know, having sat on the board of institutions like that that don't receive state funding, I can appreciate how much the contributions of the members and the supporters means to the organization, because it is really critical. That's certainly one rewarding aspect. What else have you found rewarding in your current role?
Well, this is a bit of a long list, because there are many aspects of this role that I find highly rewarding and highly enriching.
Well, that's good. That's what we want to spend time on then. Let's hear it.
So first, I think, and I've sort of mentioned it in the answer to the previous question, and maybe it's a cliche, but it really is the people. So it's the people who make up and who have built Akika to what it is today and continue to contribute to it. And the people I've had the great fortune of meeting and working with during my short time at Akika, starting with the members of the Akika board, led by exceptional president Judith Levine, who is just an absolute joy to work with and an inspiration. And it's really has made my first year and a bit so rewarding to be able to work under Judith's leadership and that of all of our board members. Next, of course, my colleagues at the Akika Secretariat, in particular, somewhat new Deputy Secretary General Samantha Kelsey, our longstanding counsel, Dr. Christian Santos, and again, our somewhat new counsel, Amy Cable, who are all amazing and so dedicated to Akika and make our day-to-day so enjoyable and enriching. There are many other people who contribute to Akika, including the members of and chairs of our various committees and task force, which I've mentioned, our fellows, all those who support our events and initiatives. And again, what I think is really special about Akika is the amount of goodwill and support we receive from the international arbitration community in Australia and abroad. And I felt that support acutely earlier this year when I had the honour of accepting the Campaign for Greener Arbitrations Award for Sustainable Behaviour at the Global Arbitration Review Awards in Paris, on behalf of the Akika Sustainability Task Force for the launch of the Akika Sustainability Protocol. That was a very proud moment for Akika, recognizing the hard work done by the members of the Akika Sustainability Task Force, chaired by Daisy Mallett. Another project which was really rewarding, and I won't repeat it, but was the first edition of the Akika Pacific Islands Practitioner Scholarship, which ran its first edition last year. It was a joy to connect with the two scholarship winners, Janelle Neigs and Ake Poa, and have them with us at Australian Arbitration Week last year in Brisbane. And we've been keeping in touch since. They're great lawyers, great people, and really great ambassadors for Akika. The list goes on. I'm sorry, JP. Another really rewarding moment came with this year's edition of Australian Arbitration Week held in Sydney, which, as we mentioned earlier, was particularly special as we celebrated Akika's 40th anniversary. We had a record number of delegates at the International Arbitration Conference and a record number of events throughout the week, over 60, making it the biggest Australian Arbitration Week to date. It was a huge effort for our team, and we all played our part in making it happen. And it was really rewarding to see it all pay off and hear about how much people enjoyed the week and how enriching they found it. And finally, on a personal note, I really enjoyed playing in the first edition of Law Rocks to take place at an Australian Arbitration Week. And we played some Australian pub classics along with some more recent tunes and were cheered on by Akika board members past and present, the Akika Secretariat team members and members of the arbitration community. And it was a really special moment and a great way to end the week.
Now, what did you play? What instrument?
So I played, let's say, the bass guitar on one song, but we also have another very talented bass guitarist, those two of us. And for the rest, I was doing what I'll call auxiliary percussion, which involves cowbell on one song. Tambourine and egg shaker was actually quite an important addition to some songs, and backing vocals.
Wow. Bass and cowbell. I like that. Well, I can tell you, I've got a fever and the only cure is more cowbell. So there you go. Well, that's great. Now, you are obviously at a pretty interesting turning point in the organization, you know, at its 40th anniversary, and you're coming in with a lot of fresh energy, obviously. What would you like to see the Akika accomplish over the next 5 years, and what would you like to see it accomplish over the next 10?
Thanks, JP. So over the next 5 years, I'd like to see Akika further strengthen our reputation as Australia's premier arbitral institution with a continued increase in our caseload. And I'd like to see Akika continue to lead in innovation, efficiency, education, and best practice. I personally would like to see how we can safely and securely use technology to become even more efficient in our day-to-day practices and for the benefit of our users. I also hope that we continue to support the next generation of arbitration practitioners and strengthen Australia's reputation in the Asia Pacific region and beyond as a hub for high quality, reliable dispute resolution. And then over the next 10 years, I would envisage a continued growth for Akika as we galvanize our reputation as a leading arbitral institution in the Asia Pacific region and beyond. I expect that Akika will continue to innovate, continue to be a true thought leader and shape best practices. I expect that we will have embraced technology to do that to some extent, and that Akika will continue to be a modern, diverse arbitral institution. I expect we'll see, again, continued growth in our caseload and also our team headcount as we continue to deliver excellence in case administration and continually meet and exceed our users' expectations. My long-term goal is that Akika will become a proverbial household name across the Asia-Pacific region and beyond for trusted, independent, and effective dispute resolution.
Wow. Well, those are all very lofty goals. And I'm quite certain with all the effort that you're putting in and the effort of those that are supporting you that you're going to accomplish it all. So we'll have to have you back in the future to hear more about it and hear how the progress is coming along. That concludes our discussion of Akika. I want to thank our guest, Diana Bowman, for her invaluable insights and information and background. And I want to thank you for listening. You should feel free to reach out to Bracewell today about any podcast questions you might have. And you should also feel free to reach out to Diana. And we look forward to having you tune in for future episodes in our Arbitration Acumen series, including our Mass Arbitration podcast miniseries that's going to start in early 2026. So thank you, Diana. Really, really a pleasure to have you on today. And as I say, we look forward to having you back sometime in the future to give us updates.
Likewise. Thanks so much, JP, for having me here. And thank you to the entire Arbitration Acumen team.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Arbitration Acumen. We hope you found it insightful and informative, and we encourage you to share it with your colleagues if you did. You can reach out to any of our speakers by contacting them directly or by emailing arbitrationacumen@bracewell.com. We welcome any questions or suggestions you might have for future episodes. And please subscribe to our podcast channel to stay up to date with our latest content.